Welcome to Menopause Uprising with me, your host, Catherine O'Keefe. Today, I think you're going to love this conversation. I was joined by my friend Aoife Dunican, also known as the Style Bob. We talk about buying red shoes in Harrods, the invisible cloak that can fall on many of us as we go through the perimenopause, menopause years, and how important it is to find that girl again as we go through these years. I hope you enjoy the session and please do leave a review or any comments below in the notes. Thank you. Aoife, thanks so much for coming in and thrilled to have you on Menopause Uprising. When I was around the age of 8, we used to go on camping holidays to the UK or France or wherever. And on one holiday, we happened to be bringing a trailer caravan through the streets of London, which, as you do, could you imagine doing that these days? It wouldn't happen. But anyway, my father was a bit maverick in his driving and so forth. But anyway, we ended up going to the Harrods sale. I'd never been to Harrods in my life. I was about 8 years old. And my dad brought me up to the kids department and I saw these red pair of shoes with a little heel and this beautiful strap. And my dad bought them for me in the sale. I couldn't even tell you now at what price they were in today's money. But Aoife, I put the shoes on. Every time I got out of the car, the shoes had to come off because I didn't want the shoes to get dirty. I didn't want them to get marked. I had those shoes for years. My mum, my dad always said, is like Imelda Marcus because she'd so many shoes. And all through my life, I have loved shoes. And that stayed with me from, I think my father put that seed there and he himself was probably very conscious and liked clothes. But your passion for clothes very much came from your family background as well, didn't it, in your childhood?
Yeah, and I'm loving listening to that memory, Catherine, because I remember going to buy my own Holy Communion shoes back in 1979. And at the time, we travelled from Westmeath up to Graham's, you know, shoe shop. Yeah. We took the number. And I found these black patent shoes, a bit like that moment of you finding the red shoes. And they were £16 at the time, which was massive money. And I'm from a farming family. So, you know, we only got paid when we sold cows or sheep. So I was hoping we sold a lot of sheep that day. And but I remember just my mother's memory actually is where she agreed to buy them for me. I started that cost per wear malarkey back then, saying, "Mum, I know they're not white, but I will wear these forever, black patent." And she said that I brought them up to the cash register and I wouldn't let them out of my sight because I was afraid somebody else would take them. And I did wear them for 2 years. But my memory, I was very lucky, I'm the youngest of seven, and craftsmanship and clothes were always a massive part of my upbringing. My mother had a fabulous sister and they made clothes all their lives. And I was always, I suppose, used to this incredible standard of taffeta dresses with hoops. And my sister went to New York, gosh, back in the 80s when there was no jobs, and she was sending me home these amazing creations. And, you know, my father bought me kind of mad fake fur coats. And actually, one story I remember very well is when my sister got married in 81, she was obsessed with Lady Diana, as they all were back then. And sorry, it was 83. And my sister more or less replicated her dress and made us all the bridesmaids' dresses, the going away dress, did the cake. So I was always used to this ridiculous, I suppose, standard of, I mean, everything. I mean, the night before, you know, our life actually was funny because we were heavily involved in activities. So we planned our social diary and what we'd wear. So it was everything from the ploughing match to the queen of the you know, the plough ball, to the, you know, Cabegan races, to the Corpus Christi procession. That was very important. So we kind of staged our lives around events and what we would wear. And I suppose I was lucky that the craftsmanship and skills my sisters had, they taught me a cut about pattern. And I suppose the presence of clothes, I was very lucky to have that probably all my life. And even my, you know, in my teenage years, my sister used to send parcels home from the States and everything of, you know, clothes we never had here, like Esprit and Tommy Hilfiger and all those things. So I was just always used to wonderful craftsmanship. And I think myself and my family, we always got massive joy out of clothes. Mm. That was really important to us. And a bit like that red shoe moment, I had lots of those growing up, and they still bring great joy even thinking about them today. And it probably is why I do what I do, because I saw the joy. As I always say, sometimes we're always looking to find the girl again. And sometimes when I'm with older women, they say, oh God, I can't be wearing red shoes. Of course you can, because actually we can replicate that girl at different stages of our lives all the time. So you the red shoe moment, I the Black Peyton moment.
I did have Black Peyton moment too, because there is a picture of me at, I must have been only about two, and I had Black Peyton shoes with gold buckles. Obviously my parents had something about shoes. But it's funny, but I neither of those shoes, we don't have them anymore, but I'd love to have them, because it was such a moment. But my dad, probably, I think very similar to yours in terms of, you know, coming up with that craftsmanship, it was very much buy one thing,
yes,
but let it be one thing that is good quality that you love. And I think that was kind of threaded probably very much throughout many aspects of, you know, my life growing up and so forth. You know, and I think, isn't that the one of the beauties of clothes, is that, you know, I could get up and I could put on a pair of, you know, leggings, sweaty Betty, whatever they are, or you could put on a dress and you're going to feel so different depending on the outfit that you put on you.
Well, what I say every day is what I wear dictates how I'll interact with the world and how the world will interact with me. So, you know, obviously I'm very bright this morning, and for a number of reasons. I'm coming to see you, and my Leaving Cert guy was leaving this morning. God love him, to do Irish too. And I think I need to be bright and cheery for that one. But it really does, because I actually feel, you know, it's a bigger piece here, but it does start with how you want to feel. I mean, the first impression piece we will talk about and all that. But I feel more in control if I start my day with who am I meeting today? How do I want to feel on my clothes? What impression do I want to make? But there's certain clothes I have, and I know you have them too in your wardrobe, Catherine, that you put on to feel a certain way. And it's amazing when you put them on, the body changes, you become more upright, because it's very important, you know, you and I both are speakers, to have that sense of projection. And there are certain clothes, for example, you know, I like to present in a jacket because I feel it's great structure and shape. I also don't have to worry about sweat marks, which we will, I'm sure, talk about. And I feel it kind of hides that. But it puts me in that zone of I'm in control. I feel powerful. And there's so many things that can take our power away and that we have no control of. So clothes are something that we can have control of, no matter what shape or size that we are. We can decide every day, because you've got to get dressed every day. What can I put on myself today to make me feel powerful? I mean, I'm here in crazy colours of pink
beautiful
and orange.
Colours.
Yeah, you should.
Eva, beautiful colours.
I got lots of smiles in the Lewis today. And that's the interesting thing, I suppose, about colour, because it is that communication piece. But it's just that, you know, for me, I wanted to feel cheerful today and positive. And I decided that today, and I made it happen. And that's what's really important.
And when you mentioned there, you know, there's so many things that can take our power away. One big one is menopause, right? Because as you go through perimenopause, menopause, you definitely, there's a little bit of, there's a change. There's, you know, you change how you interact with the world, you change as a person. And there is, particularly, I think, at work, where you can feel, you know, your confidence takes a hit, your self-esteem takes a hit. And that's power. And that power, you know, shifts.
And that's just so difficult, because, you know, I know menopause happens in many stages, but there is that waking up one morning and you look in the mirror and you go, oh my God, this can be an overnight thing. It's a bit like just aging in general. And I think what happens, certainly with a lot of people, what I've seen, so I was saying to you, you know, I'm at that peri stage, but I work with a lot of women in menopause, and women who are working as well. And what I say to them is the first thing I've seen what they want to do is put on an invisible cloak. Mm. And when we get older, whether we're menopausal or not, we cannot afford to put on an invisible cloak. We are living a lot longer, I suppose, than our mothers. We are, you know, even starting education later in our life. We're changing careers. We're doing all those things. We're having, you know, a second life after our children are growing up. So that's where the invisible cloak has to become the 100% the visible cloak. And again, it's to be visible to yourself. If you look in that mirror and say, I actually can't see myself, the problem is the world won't see you either. And I had an experience of, I went back to work in my early to mid 40s with a global professional services firm. And you can imagine, Catherine, I've been home with the children for 7 or 8 years. They were small at the time. And I'm walking through the door that morning and I'm absolutely terrified. It was also the first day of their school holidays. So the time was pretty awful. And I had not got a clue. And I remember that first day, the photocopier was broken and I kicked it. And someone said, no, you call IT. Oh, okay. back in our time, you kicked it and it worked. So it was, everything had changed. That's obviously just something, a little analogy there. But everything had changed. But the interesting thing is that I had to look different than I looked 15 years previous because the world had changed and I needed to look like my thoughts had gone with the world. I couldn't have gone back in my old marketing clothes, even if they still fitted me, because I needed to look like my mind had progressed and my clothes were very much part of that. And I remember just looking in the mirror that morning going, okay, you actually look okay. And I was wearing something, I mean, colourful at the time. You look like you belong to a professional services firm, even though you're kicking photocopiers when you go into the door. And interesting, that was a terrifying week for me. But at the end of the week, this girl said to me, and the Lewis actually on the way home was in my department, said, you know, how was your first week? I said, oh my God, awful. I really hadn't a clue. And she goes, I said, look, I haven't worked in 7 years. She goes, oh my God, I would never have thought that about you. So it's amazing how the clothes put that air of confidence around me and the perception of others towards me. So that's even more important as we get older in the workplace, because we've lots of fabulous young people coming up behind us. I'm not saying they're looking for our job or anything like that, but we need to keep relevant and modern. The world is, if you think about the workplace now, it was in my time changing every 5 years. It's now every 6 months. And I know women that I work with, they would say to me, you know, especially in their maybe mid-50s, they'd say, look, I don't want to look like I've become really trendy all of a sudden, but I do want to feel modern.
Mm, yeah.
And that's the word. If there's one word I ask women to zone in on all the time, for me, my words are relevant, modern and visible. Mm. And in the workplace, that is just so important. And clothes can be really part of that, because for me, the relevancy in the clothes I was wearing back then, because I was with people, Catherine, in the room that were 10, 15 years younger than me. I didn't want to say, who's that kind of, not that you're old at 43, 44, but what would she know? Well, actually, yes, I know a lot. And the wonderful thing about getting older is that our wisdom accumulates, which is fantastic. Mm. But our clothes should reflect that.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you look at it, the fastest growing demographic in the workplace is actually women who are perimenopause into menopause, starting postmenopause. So that 45 to 55, 60 age group. And we also know that, like, the majority of women, they want to stay working when they're in a job that they're happy, they're enjoying their career, etc. So, you know, this is where I just think this is so important, because, like, I know from my own experience when I was started perimenopause. I mean, like you, well, I'm still in perimenopause. Jeez, I don't know when this fun is going to stop. But I mean, like, I started perimenopause when I was 43, 44. I'm 52 now. So I reckon it must be going to happen in the next 12 months.
That's depressing. I'm in it. You're telling me I have another.
Well, you see, I was doing a radio interview recently, and the guy said to me on the radio, he said, Catherine, I heard that menopause just lasts 3 weeks. I was kind of like, no. No, it's not. It's not that lucky. But you know. But then I always say, look, it doesn't mean you're going to have symptoms. You can't just go through it, and you don't have symptoms. Like we know, 25% of women don't have symptoms. But one thing I would definitely have said, and particularly, I found the early perimenopause years more challenging, and I definitely found in those years, I would say, if you looked at my shoe collection, I'd say I bought no shoes.
That's unusual for you.
Extremely, extremely, because I would just say I kind of lost interest. Mm. And I think, but that was all part of the shift that was happening. And I think if I was to go back then, I guarantee you, I'd say the majority of my clothes were probably a lot darker in colour. And that was just for whatever, where I was at and maybe just coming through. Whereas I know now through everything I've learned from you, I mean, I love colour. I absolutely love colour. And I think it's that vibrancy. And you know, definitely I've looked at clothes and shops and I've kind of, oh God, I'm not looking at that because I'm in my 50s. I can't look at that. Whereas that mindset has changed for me.
Interesting thing, I suppose, around the colour piece, because it is part of that visible cloak as opposed to the invisible cloak. Colour comes in kind of, you know, I've talked in length about colour at various things, but there's two things I want to say about it as we get older is, first of all, from how it affects you physically, is that as we get older, we get more pigmentation in the skin. Certainly if we've been through any trauma, like any chemotherapy or anything like that, we can get greyness in the skin. I know menopause changes everything. So it's really important that we wear colours that suit us for a start. So for example, you know, black isn't my best colour. I'm not going to ever tell a woman black's not her best colour, because I think I'd definitely send her into therapy with that one, because we all love our black. But I know that I want to wear colours close to my face that are really good for my skin tone. So, for example, you know, someone says, oh, you can't wear red because of hot flushes or something like that. Mm-hmm. But actually, you can wear red with a bit of yellow in it, which is more a corally colour. So that's not going to totally make your skin go more red if you have rosacea or something like that. But getting those colours up close to your face, that your eyes pop, the lights in your hair come out, especially if women decide, and it's their own decision, that they want to go grey as they go older. Mm-hmm. That's where really strong colours are very important. When it comes to the whole psychology piece, I hear a lot of women say to me, God, if I couldn't do that, am I not too old for that? You know, if you think, and certainly I know myself, Catherine, when I go overseas, it's actually women in their 50s and 60s I look to more for sartorial, I suppose, inspiration, because at that stage, we've let a lot of our crap go, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we're kind of there going, you know what? If she can wear that, I can wear that. We've gone through, if you think about how much you've gone through in our life at that stage, and we're ready to say, look, if I don't do it now, I'll never do it. So I love looking at their confidence, and you can see that they were not possibly always like this, mm-hmm. but they're now, you know, like if you think of Iris, that fella I know is one extreme. A lady now who's 100 wearing all these flamboyant colours, but they've kind of let go and they're ready to do it. So having the colours that suit you, if you do want to wear a lot of black, and of course we'd never take that out of people's wardrobe, but don't be in black to hide, because a lot of people will be in black for two reasons, to hide and they think it's slimmer. Whereas if you wear the one colour the whole way up the body in similar tones, it's such an elongating effect. So like again, when I was in France and Italy last year, I'm looking at the women in their 50s and 60s. They're all in fabulous shades of neutrals, but all in tonality the whole way up. So someone said to me, oh God, if I can't wear the dreaded white jeans, the joke is the cauliflower bum. Of course you can wear white jeans. But
I've never heard of cauliflower bum.
I think my friend has, she's definitely patented that expression. But if you can wear white jeans, if you decide to get something with a thicker fabric and maybe wear it with a similar shade on top, like an off-white or maybe a camel or an off-grey and a cream, because you create that fabulous lengthening effect. So when I'm looking at all the Europeans and their neutrals, mm-hmm. I'm never looking at their body type, actually. I'm looking at a beautiful flow and harmony. I don't know if you ever noticed that with the ladies. They could have all their neutrals, lovely, lots of fabulous golds. So wearing, it could be pink the whole way up. It could be red. People think it has to be black to create that slimming mm-hmm. effect the whole way up. But that elongation in colour. The other piece about colour is the psychology, because We see colour in wavelengths of light. The stronger colours hold our attention for longer. So like the reds, the pinks, the oranges, they have a long wavelength of light. So when I need to kick myself into place, like here I'm wearing all the bright colours, I need energy to do this podcast today. And if I wanted to have, if you and I were talking about something a bit more serious, I probably would have chosen the more calming colours of blue and green. But those big, strong colours are wonderful for confidence. So if I have to stand up, especially over lockdown, I was doing a lot of Zooms and I wore my little red top because I'm reduced to a little postage stamp on lockdown. So I need to wear a strong colour to keep attention. So in the workplace, for example, I'm not saying you go around like Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat, but I would have some ladies who would have traditionally worn navy suits, and they're like the navy suits. Mm. We might put a white colour necklace on and we might put an interesting shoe on. So that colour piece is to actually show a little bit of innovation, is to show a bit of visibility. And it's just wonderful that bright colours can have that amazing visible effect on us, and also will pull us into action. Sometimes I'm scrubbing the house at home, I'll actually put on a red top. Yet after a webinar, I change into blue or green, because blue and green, the calming colours, they're a short wavelength of light, very easy on the nervous system. Look, if I go down to Sandymount this morning or I go down to Herbert Park, I'll immediately feel calm. It's that effect. Yeah. I mean, it's just wonderful. So when I get off a webinar, when I've had to be up for an hour and full of energy, I actually kind of rip off that red top because I just need to now come into a calmer place. So in the workplace, for example, if you were doing let's say a review with somebody and the review might not be the most positive in the world, you might wear blue because it's a really good colour of trust, colour and communication. If you're going for an interview to stand up in front of a crowd, you might wear a little bit of red just to show the enthusiasm and energy in your voice. But I'd love older women to look at colour, that it's not all about black. Of course, we all wear black. We're never going to take it out of our wardrobes. But can they look at it in such a way to make it maybe a little bit more interesting? Or can they try a little bit of colour, even if it's in a scarf? Because I can't tell you, colour is communication. When I go to Tesco's over lockdown in my black hoodie, black leggings, really what I'm saying to the outside world is, I'm not ready for the chat today.
Yeah.
And that's okay. We can't be up all the time. But, you know, if we want to change ourselves out of a zone, it's good to look at how colour can do that. Yeah. That's certainly how I use it every single day.
I actually find it makes shopping a bit easier when I can just look at black. Oh, I'm not going there now because I don't look at black anymore.
Yeah.
And now I just go for the colour. And all of a sudden it means, you know, there's a few racks there that you can just like, okay, don't have to bother with those. So it makes it a bit easier. But I definitely think, I mean, I so agree with everything, your whole ethos, Aoife, because I've seen it myself, how using different colours and just changing the clothes that I would wear, you know, either when I'm working or at home, and just the colour. I just love colour. And particularly it's like, as you know, I love going up the mountains, hiking and all of that. And it's the green, the calm, you know,
so
the sea,
important.
The blue, you know.
And also, I suppose, just to say there, Catherine, when I do colour analysis, it's really important for women to know what colours just make them look really tired and exhausted. So for me, it's not like I'm always going out choosing my perfect colour. I just know pastels make me milky and white, but beautiful and very pale blondes, so fabulous on them. I know all those gorgeous autumn colours, you know, that look wonderful, all the khakis and the creams and the orange and terracotta. They're wonderful and an extremely warm skin tone, but I'd have to work too hard. So when it comes to shopping, I'm pretty quick. You know, I'll avoid that rail of browns and creams because I know it's not going to work. Or I have to fake tan myself for about 20 hours, you know.
How do women know that? How do you figure out what colour is going to work for you?
So, I mean, we've two types of skin tone. We've cool and warm. The cool skin tone is quite obvious in a way. If I was to use, let's say, a star, would be kind of Angelina Jolie, Nigella Lawson, that very strong contrast of dark hair to skin, right? You could say in a way, because of my darker hair and my pale skin, that I would have a cool skin tone. But in fact, I have a rosy cheek and I do tan in summer, so I'm not particularly cool. Those kind of people, they look, because they've got no, I suppose, they don't blush, they're very, very pale. they can take what I call the Dulux Heritage colour card, the magenta, the fuchsias, the absolute bright reds, the blacks, the really dark navies. They can take like that royal blue really, really well, right? What happens is that when they put colour up to the skin tone, so I'll go back to that original question in a minute, they don't have lines, they don't show up, or we get those lines under our nose either side. There doesn't show up any greyness in the skin. So they can command that strong colour of fuchsia. The other cool skin tone is your kind of Nordic person, very pale blonde. If they wear a strong colour, Catherine, it overpowers them, but they look fabulous in pastels. Okay. You know, that pale blonde that doesn't tan, you know, in a mint green and a sky blue looks absolutely gorgeous. The warm skin tone, the two types, you've got your, I suppose, you could say red hair, brunette, blushes, clear blue eye. What looks wonderful in the colours of spring, the emerald greens, the aqua blues, the coral reds, and then the other warm skin tone, the Italians that take very like a yellow in their skin tone, they are wonderful in all those dirty colours of autumn. Now, how we know is that first we have to classify whether we're cool or warm skin tone. If you take a tan, or have probably red hair, freckles or something like that, you would be considered to have a warm skin tone. Then you can take pretty much clear and bright colours. Okay. If you had that dark, dark hair, probably blue veins, very pale, never take a colour, heavy, strong, heavy contrast to hair and eye, that's very cool. But the simplest way to do it is stand there in the morning time with no makeup on, with light up, you know, make sure you've got light up onto your face. And you would. I always start off with people, see what white looks on you versus off-white.
Okay.
So pure white actually is a very hard colour for a lot of people to wear. The person who's that cold, cold skin colour, very pale and black, actually wears white beautifully. When I put white right up against my skin, I go really pale. There's a cast that goes right up into my face. So if I want to wear it, I have to wear it in a shirt. I have to kind of wear the neck open a bit.
Okay, so you have your skin,
A necklace in. When you put off-white against your skin, I certainly know for me, with having a warm skin tone, everything just, I don't have that veil of white that goes up to the skin. Look at pastels. Do pastels make you pasty? They make me pasty.
Me too,
Like a pale pink. Funny, when I came back from training in London, when I studied in London College of Style, I looked at this pale pink top that cost me a lot of money and I said, how come it never goes out the door? I was so, you know, when you have to grab the bronzer 10 times.
Okay, yeah.
Way too pasty. So I know, okay, the really pale colours suit the cool skin tone, like the blondes. And then I'll put up blacks and navies. If I put up black against my face and I see that any shadows we have under our eyes gets more pronounced, if I see any redness gets more redder, like if you put up burgundy against somebody's face that suffers from rosacea or red, it'll inflame.
It'll
absolutely inflame. What you should see is no shadows, a lovely calm skin tone, and the eyes should just come out really bright. Like emerald green, for example, would bring a lovely warm skin tone out.
Isn't that hard to do with the lighting in shops these days? Or does it make it easier?
It's shocking. I mean, and especially, you know, if you shop at 5:30 on a Saturday evening, you've got to be at something at 6. the lighting makes it really difficult. Mm. But that's why you're better off knowing, you know, the way I look at colour analysis for me is that I look at what I know is going to make me crap. Because if I know, if I buy it, I won't wear it, Catherine. Mm. So I know if I quick flick on the rail of pastels, don't go there. €1,000 down to €5, I might consider it. I put on a statement necklace with it, but I know not to go there. I know when I see the browns and creams and khakis, I say, you know what? I love that khaki. It has to be in a skirt. It can't be right under my face. But the lighting in shops is awful. But if you know beforehand that what you roughly are, then it's much easier.
Okay, yeah.
Because people end up, and that's the downside of Instagram. I know we're both on it, it's very important for business, but people buy what looks good on others and then it doesn't look good on them. And that's a massive issue. What I'm seeing in people's wardrobe at the moment is a lot of stuff that they bought because it looks good in somebody else. And we should, you know, praise our wonderful individual selves, because that's what we are.
Yeah. So it's getting to know those colours. And then once you get to know those colours, and if we go back to I did a menopause in the workplace survey back in 2021, I think, or 22. But the top five symptoms that women report as impacting with work, one was brain fog, no surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Number two was anxiety. Number three was the impact on confidence. And we know the anxiety is an impact on confidence and self-esteem. And I think that's where, if you can just one, I guess, step towards helping yourself as you go through perimenopause all the way and into postmenopause, is looking at what are the little steps that I can do that will help start to, you know, get that confidence back, so that, you know, because, you know, ideally you want to look at your management options, get a handle on the brain fog, you know, any other symptoms that are there. But it's then just trying to do the practical steps that, you know, will help your confidence. So let's say, for example, you are experiencing, let's say it's brain fog, let's say it's hot flushes. Well, then your clothes will be a step towards helping. If it's brain fog, maybe you're going to wear something that's going to make you feel more pep in your step, more confident. If it's hot flushes, you are going to look at what you're going to wear in terms of, like you mentioned earlier, you wear a jacket because of, you know,
the sweat patches.
You know,
so the whole thing is, you know, that up at number three, that confidence piece, we all know confidence is a real layering process. There's so many things that go in to making us confident. And the reason why the clothes part of that layer, I suppose, is so important is because it is the first thing we see and it's the first thing somebody else will see. And I think what happens with women sometimes with the clothes, and this is tied into brain fog, is that they just go, oh God, I don't know where to start. I'm overwhelmed. I go into the shop and what happens is they buy a pair of leggings.
And before we get to that leggings decision, what we also tend to forget is that decision making is a part of brain fog. So it's like, I'm going to go for the leggings because I know they'll fit. I've been wearing them through COVID for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And you all of a sudden, okay, well, I've sorted the decision making part is out.
Or the worst thing is, actually, that top is great. Do you have it in 10 other colours?
God, I've done that. Not 10.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Because all of a sudden, so what happens with that brain fog is, I think you have to kind of acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. It's there. And you have to really simplify the clothing process, right? Yeah. Because if you think about waking up in the morning, you have a lot of decisions to make, okay? From what you're going to eat to how you're going to get to work to whatever it is, you've got to simplify that clothing process. Because what happens is, what I hear all the time is, I have a wardrobe full of clothes, but I have nothing to wear.
Yeah.
So what happens in that situation is that people close the wardrobe. They almost want to put a hammer in it and they go out and they buy more stuff because they kind of go, oh, there's nothing in there. And they walk away. And it all just, what happens is that it creates more brain fog, more stress. And then you actually start to doubt yourself because you're saying to yourself, you could be running a company, you could be working forever. I actually can't even dress myself here. Okay, and the basics. So what you kind of have to do is step back. So the first thing I do, and I say a lot about this in my talks, is that you kind of have to go into that lifestyle wheel first. Because if you think about it, before COVID, certainly, you know, when I worked in professional service, I was going to work four to 5 days out a week. So to be honest, life was easy, Catherine, in terms of my sartorial choices. There's my corporate wardrobe. I get up in the Monday morning, I wear that. Okay, I won't wear it at the weekend, but actually that makes my life easy when I have to get 3 kids out in the morning. At the weekend, I wore my casual wear. Now it's all changed. You've got new dress codes and you've got a new lifestyle. You might not be in the office 2 days a week. You might never be there. So first of all, don't panic, because you might say to yourself, oh my God, I need all these new clothes. No, first of all, what's the lifestyle? What do I really need them for? Like you and I talk about what our plan is for the year in terms of clothes that we need. I look at now events. I know I'm back face to face. So, you know, this is what I need. So let's break it down. When I go into the wardrobe, I need it for this. This is what I need for my day to day. You have to do that first step, because then you're walking into a shop without a plan. Mm-hmm. The second thing afterwards, I suppose, is before you create a wardrobe, because you have to have 4 or 5 looks in your wardrobe that you feel great in. that in the morning time, if the dishwasher's broken down, I don't know, the dog's got loose, you know that that outfit is going to work. You've got to put the time into creating those five looks. And what I say to people before you go out and start shopping for that, you've got to look inside. I know, Catherine, you have done your own massive detox. I have done my own massive detox over the last 2 or 3 weeks. And the one thing is that although I did shed clothes, I also found some old gems that I want to represent me now and where I'm going. I'm trying to simplify my life by actually taking the stuff out that no longer serves me and keeping the stuff that does. And by actually doing that, and you have to put the work in, is that I said, oh, you know what? Now, there's my five looks. They'll do me for my talks. They'll do me for my this. So if I didn't have those, which some women say, if I don't even have those, at least you know your gaps beforehand. Mm. So that when you go, you do lifestyle analysis first. Secondly, you've got to cleanse the wardrobe. Get rid of pieces that don't serve you. And then you need to actually go shopping for the gaps that you don't have. What I do with shopping is that I try and keep everything into a kind of a colour family. So we talked about that, too many colours in your wardrobe. I try and keep everything, let's say, within greys or within whites, whatever it is. But I do stop and simplify the process. And then when I go into shop, I have, it's almost like a shopping list. You're not going to bake a cake unless you have the ingredients. Mm. So I go in and I say, I know I need, you know what, I have 3 suits at home, they're great. I have no shoes to go with them. Or I have no top for underneath. Or actually, do you know what? Now that I've got hot flushes, I think I need to get tops with a bit more aeration at the armhole. Mm-hmm. Or I might need to get some darker tops for presentations. Because I know I did one last year. I was wearing a coral silk top. I happened to be abroad in 40 degrees in Mallorca. And I had aircon on. But didn't the lady on the other side say there's a noise coming from your side? So I kicked the aircon, broke it. And then I was talking about body language and how you need to energize a Zoom call. I looked down. I was 2 different colours. And they're saying, why isn't she demonstrating? Because you're supposed to have your hands flying in the air. And I went, oh, good Jesus. So anyway, I ended up getting actually a cotton patch put into that blouse.
Underneath the arm.
Yeah.
You
can actually get them on Amazon. I couldn't afford to go through that again.
Okay.
So that was where, but it's to simplify the process. And a lot of women think they've got to run out and just start shopping. And next minute they come home with stuff that they don't need or that awful word, handy clothes.
Oh, yes.
Because as I said, too much handy leaves no room for fabulous.
Yeah.
This is a fabulous time in our lives. And don't get me wrong, I like a Breton top like anyone. Do I need 5 of them? Are they making me fabulous? No, unless I'm in France carrying a French stick and I'm on my way down to the market. I'll feel fabulous because I'm not working and I'll feel great. But you know what I mean? It's just a handy option the whole way out because they go, oh, I can't do this. But it takes effort to be effortless. And that doesn't mean looking as effortless as the Italians. That means putting a small bit of work in to going into the shops. I mean, you and I have spoken about online shopping versus real life shopping. And online is great to a point. And we had to do it over lockdown. Obviously, we had no choice. But you cannot be getting in there and trying on the clothes. And that's where you will actually go, I wouldn't have paid for that online, but you know, now that I see it in the flesh, God, that's really fabulous.
Yeah.
But women make it hard on themselves and you can't make this stress, getting dressed any harder it is in the morning because I know it's like going away for a weekend. When you've clothes in that bag you love, you want to go away.
Mm, yeah.
So same with your wardrobe.
Yeah, with your girls.
Well, you want to go with your girls. If you've clothes that you love in your wardrobe, you want to show up. And you've got to show up at this age in our lives because there's too many. And a lot of women, Catherine, don't show up because they don't have the clothes to wear.
Yeah.
I know that sounds crazy.
Yeah. But no, it doesn't at all. And I think, like, the weekend I was doing decluttering my wardrobe. I don't know where, if you had it on an Instagram or a podcast, it might have been a podcast, but you said too much handy leaves no room for fabulous. And I was decluttering and it definitely spurred me on. But then I was looking for a pair of shoes and I did go shopping. But it was funny. I just walked into one or two shops and I was, you know, the way you're browsing, you're looking at things. But in my head, I was kind of like, fabulous. Where's fabulous? I was looking for fabulous. But if you can even bring that with you when you go out, that makes the decision making, which we know can be difficult in menopause, that makes it easier, because it needs to be something that you're just going to just like my red shoes, that you're just going to look at and love. Like, I know for a fact I slept with those shoes under my pillow or wherever for I don't know how long afterwards.
Did you keep them?
Sorry, that's what I was saying. We did keep them for years, but then they're gone now. I don't know where they are. But it is that fabulous piece. It has to, you have to look at, and that's the way I look at it now, that really, if I'm going to buy something, it's not because it's handy. It's because I really love it, absolutely love it.
And it will save you money, believe it or not. I know sometimes when we get older, we need to spend a little bit more. I mean, we've had lots of conversations about good jeans and all that type of stuff. But if you buy something fabulous, you will wear it, because the handy stuff, it's handy. Mm-hmm. And we're not really showing our greatness, if you know what I mean, inside. And if it's fabulous, you'll actually just reach for it all the time. It's like when I'm dressing women and we're doing jeans shopping, and they say to me, if I'm not spending that much money on jeans, and I say, okay, that's fine, let's just try on these pair of jeans. The next minute they come out and they look at their bottom and they go, does it come in another colour? And it's just, but it's that piece of, I've never felt so fabulous in you know, because sometimes, and not, by the way, it's not that you spend a lot of money to dress yourself. That's sometimes the opposite case. But sometimes getting the right amount of lycra in something, the right amount of support to lift the bottom up or whatever it is, It all helps in feeling fabulous.
And just talk us through there the cost per wear, because I know this is something you talk about a lot. And I think, look, I see it a lot now, you know, the financial constraints everybody's experiencing because of, you know, just life. And particularly, I think, you know, menopause can be an expensive time, depending on what your management options are or so forth. So it's, but I do think I look differently. And you know what? I probably have done this because my dad in particular would have been very much for, you know, the value, the quality of something that he would buy either for himself or for us. But how do you translate that into the practical every day, the cost per wear?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I grew up with the buy once, buy well mentality, but absolutely, there's massive financial strain, because even the cost of menopause medication and all the other stuff that's so expensive at the moment. So for me, it does go back to, if I have four tops, I can buy four tops for, go to John Stores, buy a pint of milk, come home with a top for 30 quid, right? Because you know what? It was there and it's easy. And you could say to yourself, well, look, that's all I can afford this month. But what happens is that every time, if you're going to do your weekly shopping in the stores and you're constantly buying a top, that all adds up, right? That really adds up. And that top may not be fabulous and it may not stand the test of time. So I go back to the pieces that I need to sometimes spend money on that I will get the cost per wear. So you can put that into two categories. I have a crazy leopard print jacket that I bought 18 years ago that is still going strong, a designer piece, or I could put it into a really good pair of black trousers that actually might just make the rest of my wardrobe open up. Mm-hmm. And I know that if I even just buy that, or is it one good top that I have loads of trousers at home, and that'll actually get me through a lot. Or is it a blazer, Catherine? It's back to those key capsule wardrobe pieces that actually might open up my wardrobe, as opposed to looking at something going, like, I can't afford that. But actually look at where it can fit in your wardrobe and make it useful. If you think about years ago, how we lived in our 20s, we had, certainly in my time, I had that one great black trousers or skirt that just changed the tops all the time. Also, clothes have gone ridiculous money. So I do have an issue sometimes of going into a shop and seeing a polyester top that I might sweat in for €250. I mean, I don't care what the cost per wear is. That's just too much money for a polyester top. So now what I'm, I suppose, asking people to do is, you know, again, look inside your wardrobe, see what you have. But think of the sales. You know, I love my sales this time of the year. Also, don't dismiss pre-loved. You know, I mean, both you and I have had fun with pre-loved. I've had my disasters. And then you say to yourself, oh, no, it's fabulous, really, that crocodile jumpsuit with the pink bows.
Those shoes I just cannot squeeze into. They're still fabulous. I even brought them to, what's his name, you know, the shoe.
The stretcher.
The shoe stretcher. Isaac, that's right. I even brought him there. They're still not going to fit me.
Oh, no. I've done that. Yeah, I've done it. But I have to admit with pre-loved, certainly I know for me personally, is that if I need a fabulous pair of shoes for an occasion, and shoes have gone ridiculous money, the first place I look is pre-loved. Because if you know your brand and that size, so if you are a particular brand, you know, I'm always a six in that, the risk is much lower.
I know
you had your situation with those shoes, but I certainly know certain brands are standardized. But it is back to, you know what, and I always use the Michael O'Leary analogy. If we've 10 kg to take away for a weekend and we've got 20 tops that we bought in the last kind of 6 months because we bought a pint of milk, we bought a top, you don't love any of them, and you can only take two tops and a 10 kg. Whereas if we'd actually stopped and bought maybe one or two pieces, we'd actually love to go away. Mm-hmm. I always give a little tip at the start of the season. Sorry, how I dress myself. Buy your most wanted and obvious piece first at the start of the season, because I know it's not in a sale. It might be a good coat. It might be a good pair of black boots. It scuppers your budget a bit, okay? But what happens is that you love that and you wear it. And I had my own experience of buying a very good, years ago, went shopping to Tesco's, saw a fabulous pair of black trousers. Now, the Tesco shop was a bit small that month because the trousers were so lovely. But you know what? It scuppered the budget for the rest of the season, but I wore those trousers so much, as opposed to just buying lots of little handy things
along the way. Just throwing it into the trolley. Yeah.
Because you know what actually ends up happening is that you've got to go somewhere on a Thursday night and you look in your wardrobe and you go, do you know what? I've nothing. And you go out and you buy it again.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, and I see it in people's wardrobes all the time. And it's, look, we're all human. It's very hard not to be tempted by those things. But actually it ends up, and it's very bad for the environment, obviously, but it ends up costing us huge money in the long run.
And I think the other thing too, if we start doing that every time, that's overwhelming as well. And the whole thing, I just think in menopause, we've got to, everything we need to just introduce calm wherever we can. And I think that starts with kind of your clothes, so that your clothes should be something that support you in a really nice, uplifting way, that it doesn't become another, oh my God, I've got to shop for jeans. Oh, that's so overwhelming. And, you know, you're nearly pass out at the thought of it.
Yes. And especially jeans shopping.
I've been there.
Yeah. Jeans shopping is hell. But set aside the time for it. I mean, that's the whole thing with the wardrobe. It's like everything in life. You have to set aside a time. If you keep ignoring it, you keep buying badly, and that'll cause more stress.
Can I just say, you were talking earlier about the cotton patches that you can put under shirts, and this is something that I've recommended to quite a few women in the workplace who are having hot flushes, and I found them brilliant. You know those Uniqlo, the little really skin, the thermals in winter. They can be fantastic just to wear underneath.
I have six of them.
I've just the one.
Cost per wear.
But I must actually get a link for those, and I'll put them in, because I just find you kind of, even just the comfort of knowing that that's there.
Did you have the ballet thermals?
Yeah, they're ballet. So that even if I'm wearing a blouse or a shirt or whatever, you don't actually see it. Yeah. But, you know, and even like sometimes, you know, obviously in winter when it's colder, it's perfect.
And it absorbs actually sweat, those tops, and they dry quite quickly. I know six sounds a bit extreme, but to be honest, even if you want to wear a nice wool or cashmere jumper, it'll save them as well from having to wash them all the time.
Okay. That's another. And is the ballet top the only one, Aoife, or is there other ones there that are good? Because I know they're very good price as well.
I tell you what I love. They do a thing called a bra top, actually.
I have that.
Yeah. And what I love about that, just from a comfort point of view, is that they're wireless, but they still give you great support and shape. And I have a number of those. That's what I probably wear actually on a regular basis. But I know Marks and Spencer's do the equivalent, and I know Falk also do a cold climate top, it's called, which I can give you a link to as well after that. But it's again, anything that can absorb that sweat, because what happens is, you know, with sweat is that, I didn't realize this myself, is that if you get, you might think you don't sweat, and then you add menopause and anxiety. Like, I don't know about you, Catherine, but sometimes the presentation, there's that wonderful anxiety beforehand. That's actually great to get your anticipation.
Yeah.
And next minute you go, oh, where did that come from? So I just feel, and that's the whole thing, is that women need to go into a meeting or whatever it is, knowing that their clothes are not going to take away their concentration, what they're trying to say. Mm. So it's like when I present, the reason why I like a jacket is that I just know I'm in the all clear.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to be safe in terms of sweating and all that, so that I can get on with what I want to say.
Yeah. Yeah. That's you don't have to worry about it. It's just not on the agenda.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And I think, just because I'm conscious too, that sometimes you can have, you know, a lot of women, if you're on, say, in pharmaceutical and you have a uniform, or if you're on a manufacturing line, that's where those Uniqlo tops, I think, can be really beneficial, because depending on, obviously, I'd encourage employers to look at the ingredients in the uniforms, because if they're synthetic, they're going to make hot flushes worse. But certainly if you can put layers yourself underneath, it can also really help.
I'll tell you what's great as well. I know sometimes if you really suffer from hot flushes, sometimes people, I know one lady, she got her, the armholes made bigger in her, in her dresses. But if, let's say, you decide to wear a scoop neck top just because you really are trying to get air into the body, I always encourage my clients to have a silk scarf in their bag, because let's just say you're in the middle of a meeting and you feel a hot flush coming on, you've decided to wear something low that day, not ridiculously low, but low to let in, not to feel so hot. The silk scarf over you will actually cover the hot flushes without it making you sweaty, because silk is a natural fibre and it's not stuck to your body. It's just gently over, because you might think to yourself, God, where are those hot flushes? Are they going to go up my neck? Are they going to go left or right?
Yeah.
So that scarf, just again, it's all about, as a woman, especially if you're in a room full of men or whatever it is, it's all about, oh my God, okay, I'm okay now. I know the scarf is covering, but it's just, I always say, keep it in your handbag if you feel a moment coming on.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can spread it out if you feel that there's...
Well, because unfortunately, you know, generally when you get a hot flush, you get cold afterwards. So you need a scarf or something light to put back on again, you
yes.
know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in a lot of workplaces, it is great. You know, many women are just kind of just saying, sorry, you know, I'm just having a hot flush and just moving through it. But that's, you know, that's not the case for everybody. So I think it is all about kind of, you know, how you feel comfortable, you know.
Exactly. Some women are very happy to say that, and others when you don't want to let anyone know that this is the stage that they're going through. So that just depends on your personality, your comfort levels, obviously, with it. But I just think that sneaky scarf, and we all have one.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Just dig it out.
Yeah. Dig it out.
Any final practical tips or advice you'd like to give?
The biggest thing, and I know I've touched on it, is that as we get older, whether it's menopause or not, our style can actually get better if we're willing to go there, right? If we decide to stay the same all the time and dress the way we did 10, 20, 30 years ago, nothing changes. And also, like, I mean, even my time going back to professional services, my mind changed by the way I dressed and presented myself. So what I would say is, don't stay the same, because we're not the same, Catherine. We're very different as we get older, and it's a wonderful stage to be at. I would start with that piece around, it is a bit of work to dig deep into your wardrobe and to put the time into the lifestyle analysis and to actually take out the clothes. Does it fit me? As you know, are they wrecked? All those things that we did. But I can tell you, when you get to the other side, I don't know how you felt after your detox. I felt a massive weight. And what happens is that I now open my wardrobe and they're all my friends. And friends are people that encourage us, that lift us up. And I know there are pieces in there that will take me into a different place.
Yeah.
And I've put the work, obviously I know it's the business, you could say it's easier for me, it's the business I'm in. I go through the very same imposter syndrome that everybody else goes in. We all go through the same stuff and anxiety and all that. But look at your clothes as that support mechanism. Word is always king. Who you are as a person is always going to be. That's the most important thing. But if I need to project an image, I need to feel it first.
Yeah.
It's so important. So every day you've got to get dressed, make it count. And I always finish with everyone in a room has the right and power to feel fabulous. Menopause, you know, I was going to use the word attacks us, but that's the wrong word. Menopause comes at us in so many different ways. It could be weight gain, brain fog, could be all everything. But please don't look at this, oh gosh, I'm not that person I used to be. You're a new fabulous person. And the one thing I see all the time is everybody, two things people do, trying to dress and fit into the clothes they did 20 years ago or 10 years ago and trying to dress like other people. Because if, you know, I know, for example, I am long bodied, short legged. There's no point in me going out and buying low rise trousers because they may suit others. They're not going to do anything for me. So I now stand back. The one thing after my training in London is that I know what works for me and I know what doesn't. And I've now let go of what doesn't because
I'm not trying.
I've been in dressing rooms with lots of women. And trust me, what I put on one woman is fabulous and doesn't suit another. And it's not because she's a size 6 or a size 16 or whatever it is. It's not because of that. She is unique. She is different. And if we can just celebrate our differences and actually dress for our colour, our body shape, our style, personality, our goals, our life. And I mean, forget about everybody else. But I can't tell you how good that feels.
Liberating.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, back wearing the red shoes again or whatever it is. But it's a real case of that looks wonderful on you, but this is better for me.
Yeah,
it's a customized approach. And I certainly know I'm at fabulous peace myself with what works for me and what will support me and what won't. And especially, you know, I started Style Bob later in life. So it's very important that I have clothes that support me doing this at this stage of my life.
Brilliant. And I think that all ties in very nicely, Aoife, in relation to the fact that menopause is a liberation. It is a chapter that we go through. And yes, it can have its upheavals. But at the end of the day, you do come through that change, that transformation. And it is that, you know, I love the Japanese way of looking at it, is that it's the renewal opportunities that come with menopause. And I think that's where just embracing it on all levels, and that is part of our clothes, whatever that is for you. You know, it'll be different for every single person listening to this. But Aoife, thanks a million, and I'll put all your details in the show notes so people can contact with you. But thanks very much for coming on the podcast,
and thank you, Catherine, for having me.
Thank you for listening to Menopause Uprising with me, your host, Catherine O'Keefe. I really hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forget to like, subscribe, rate and review, as it really helps the show. Tickets for the 4th Menopause Success Summit on Saturday, the 14th of October in the Royal Marine Hotel in Dunleary, Dublin, are on sale now from menopausesuccesssummit.com.